Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
Speaking of a creative love of dance, Timory, are you ready for the world of dance? Are you excited about this new program?
You know, I've heard about it, but I haven't even seen a preview because I don't really watch a ton of
television. That's right. You're one of those non-television people. They were promoting it heavily this week as we were watching the finale of The Voice. I'll admit, I'm a sucker for some of these competition shows, especially The Voice and last year, because generally I haven't been. You know, we watched like the first season of American Idol and since then, whatever.
I used to watch it a lot. I think you can dance, all of it.
Yeah, well, I got sucked into America's Got Talent because my kids, you know, we're SoCal people, so you get these invitations all the time. Hey, come get tickets.
Go to the show.
Right, so yeah. My wife and my daughter went to America's Got Talent, like the taping. You know, they got tickets somehow. And so they went, and they're like, oh, this is fantastic. It was so fun. And, of course, we got to check it out, see if they made it on TV and all that stuff. And we got hooked in. It was fantastic.
Watch the show.
Well, along with that, we got watching The Voice, and man, there were some excellent performances. There's a lot of talent out there. Anyway, all that to say, the newest one is called World of Dance,
and it made me think
of you because it's not like a here, can you dance sort of thing, so you think you can dance or anything. No, it's like they're bringing in the best dancers in the world to dance. So
I'm excited. I'm going to have to watch it online. You know, the difference with me too is that when you watch things online, you don't have TV, you don't get any commercials,
you can't
pause through the DVR to look at everything. You know, it's all online. So I'm free of commercials, but then I miss these exciting shows that are coming out sometimes.
I think last night was the first time I had watched a program with commercials in years, and man, is it
really
frustrating. Because we don't usually, we record the shows,
or
you do it on demand. Yeah, we don't watch anything like live, maybe a sporting event or something. But you're like, what are we doing? We're wasting our life. Like, this is like three quarters of this program is nothing but wasted time. Anyway, lots of fun. Let's get to some more serious topics. Pope Francis was in the news.
Yes, Pope Francis over the last week. Really important, I think, as we're talking more and more about bioethics and in vitro fertilization. Pope Francis recently visited a group really dealing with research for people who are suffering with Huntington's disease. I personally have family members who have really struggled and are in some of the later stages of Huntington's disease. So you certainly see, and close to home, a very worthy cause for researchers to be continuously working for cures or alleviation of suffering. However, Pope Francis, when addressing this topic, talked about how some scientists in ways are participating in what he has coined the throwaway culture. And he says, quote, at times infiltrates even the world of scientific research. Where he continues to go on, he says some branches of research, in fact, utilize human embryos, inevitably causing their destruction, the Pope said. But we know that no ends, even noble in themselves, such as predicted utility for science, for other human beings, or for society, can justify the destruction of human embryos.
Yeah, is it just me, or has this died down a little bit in the past few years that was supposed to be this gigantic scientific breakthrough when they started doing stem cell research on embryos, right?
Yes.
And embryonic stem cells were going to be
save the world,
the cure all. We were going
cancer.
To be able to just cause them to heal us all.
Yes.
And really, I don't think there's actually been one major breakthrough in regards
to that. There have been no breakthroughs in the area of embryonic stem cell research. Now, people say, no, there's research all the time being done that's successful. It's adult stem cell research. People are being cured of things such as cancer and major neurological and other types of life-threatening diseases with adult stem cell research, including the stem cells from the umbilical cord from the baby. That's why so many people are putting more and more emphasis on when you have your baby, focusing on saving that umbilical cord for the future or donating it for other people who can use those incredible, what are more developed stem cells. But this ties in at the same time, Dawn, to the issue of the fetal tissue industry and how we're seeing the purchasing of fetal remains from the aborted children. There have been no successes in embryonic stem cell research or these. Now, however, they are using parts from the aborted babies in certain types of vaccinations, which is a whole nother topic in and of itself.
Right.
But here's the problem. When we are creating life in order to destroy it in the name of researching to help other lives, but yet we've never seen success, as well as the fact that we're destroying life in the process, Pope Francis is just reiterating the clarity of human life and that it's not to be played with.
Yeah, and there's a lot of topics that go along with it. Sometimes we as Catholics maybe don't address as much. So I think we're pretty strong on the whole notion of, listen, we can't create embryos just to take their stem cells and then toss them away, right? Straightforward. Of course, we should not do that. However, interestingly, a lot of the research is done, apparently, on embryos that have been thrown away or discarded from IVF.
And that's the issue.
Yeah.
There are millions of children. I think I was looking at a number just recently, and just within, here we're looking away, Human Fertilization Embryo Authority in the UK reported 1.7 embryos have been thrown away just in the UK since 1991.
1.7 million.
1.7 million.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, so what are we to do with those 1.7 million?
Yes.
And this is an issue whether or not you agree with doing research on these embryos. Those embryos are there based on all of the folks who are doing in vitro. They're not thinking, all right, we're going to do research. They're just, we want a baby, and now we've got all these extra embryos.
And you know, it's interesting we bring this topic up, and we might have to take this into the next segment. But last week, one of those days, those coffee shop conversations, Dawn, I had one that I tend to get myself into. It was one of those days where you're sitting here thinking, I do not have a lot of time. I need to get this project done while I'm sitting here. It was a project for the radio show you and I were talking about at 3 hours. And sure enough, this very, very nice man comes and sits down next to me and is feeling very chatty. And if he's listening, I hope he is. We had a great conversation. And it just shows the importance of always being open to the people sitting next to you. You never know where a simple conversation talking about a book you're reading or whatever it might be could turn into something not just that maybe they need, but sometimes something you need as well in your life experiences to learn from. And this is what stood out to me, Dawn. Lo and behold, minutes later, he kind of figures out a little bit about what I do and my radio work, ends up sharing that he himself went through the process of in vitro fertilization with his wife. And he comes from this, let's say 20, 30 years later, saying he's not in favor at all of IVF. He's pro-life. He understood from the beginning, it sounds like, the issue of aborting the additional embryos, babies that are implanted into the woman's womb if, say, more developed than you'd like.
Right.
He said, yeah, that was problematic. You know, already saw the problem with that in a sense. But he talks about how, just in his own experience, they actually weren't able to have a child in the end.
Oh.
They weren't. Multiple embryos were implanted. The babies did not continue to flourish in the womb and died. And how his own wife, for years now, has a difficulty being in contact with children. And how the trauma has brought to her years later. And how even his best friend, Don, one of his friends, who he knew, a similar couple, went through the same process. They were able to have a child, but the wife had such a traumatic experience with the hormones that were pumped into her body that her body never leveled back out to a proper place. It put her in a very challenging psychological place, and she was actually never able to care for her child and had to be placed in a place where she could be cared for herself.
Wow. It strikes me that this is another one of those topics where, oh, we just take for granted that everyone does this, that it's a good, and the negative consequences are probably pretty widespread, yet sort of under the radar. It's like taking the pill or taking some, doing some of these other things that are associated with the sexual revolution and the new technology. We celebrate, oh yes, this is great, you know, technology, let's accept it. And then you don't hear, I don't hear those stories very often.
And that's what I actually looked at him, Don, because it's a really important point that you said, we don't hear this. I looked at him and I said, thank you for sharing this with me. And he said, I hope, you know, he saw, I hope it's helpful for something you do and also for his healing journey, revisiting the topic. And he said, all the way to the way we created, tried to create this life and how, in a sense, it took that love and fruitfulness out of the act of human love and creating a child. And just totally dehumanized it and dehumanized the woman and the couple. And it just makes you turn back to different things like this conversation about research on these embryos. And you understand why the church is so clear. And I said this to him. I said, I'm so blessed that my church is clear on the teaching of in vitro fertilization and how science is consistent and shows why the church's teaching is so important.
Yeah, it's so nice to hear Pope Francis talk about it. His term was the throwaway culture. It's one that we've been used, but you're exactly right. What do you throw away? You throw away things, right? You don't throw away people, you throw away things. But if you start treating people as things that you can throw away, then of course it dehumanizes them. It's a very interesting topic, thanks to your friend.
Yes, I'm sharing. So glad. And I'm just going to throw this out here before we come to this next break, and that is, even MIT Technology Review has come out being consistent with talking about how embryonic stem cell research, have we seen anything come from it? No, we haven't seen anything yet. In case you're thinking, oh, Don and Tim just talked about this, MIT is talking about this as well.
All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Don and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
This last week, Don, I received a note from a listener over concern about five-year-olds, or should I say children as young as five, going to a play at a Catholic school in Canada, essentially promoting the LGBTQ community and different conversations about boys and girls. There was a show that was going to be previewed essentially in Canada, in Niagara Catholic School District, Boys and Girls and Other Mythological Creatures was the show.
let's just stop there for a second. Boys, Girls, and Other Mythological Creatures. Like, immediately, we're like, oh no.
Where are we going with this? I just can't believe that this is even a conversation. Luckily, in Canada, the play was canceled after it was apparently shown at one Catholic school, and they immediately saw it being just problematic as a whole, not only for the age group, but also with the church's teaching. But I think, just to begin with, my question, why do we have to continuously test these conversations of quote-unquote equality and inclusion with five-year-olds, little children?
Yeah, the play featured an eight-year-old boy who dresses as a girl and questions his gender. You're right, why is that a topic for conversation in elementary school? Why is sex such an obsessive topic with the public school system?
Well, they think that transgenderism is a very important topic with small children. And without their parents being present, the curriculum states on this topic that it is also critical to student success to create an atmosphere in which students of all body shapes and sizes, abilities, gender identities, and sexual orientations, and ethnocultural, racial, and religious backgrounds feel accepted, comfortable, and free from harassment.
This is really frustrating and sad, and it does make me a little bit angry. Have they spent time with children? Like, has anybody actually spent time with any kids? I have. I've actually spent quite a bit of time with small children. You know what they don't talk about when they're playing in the backyard or on the playground? Or they don't talk about transgenderism. They actually don't talk about sex at all. In general.
If they have a question, it's sometimes very simple of trying to understand boy, girl. Well, I'm a boy. I'm a girl. That's very simple because they don't have an understanding, like you said, of their sexuality at that age. We are sexualizing young children by forcing this topic on them.
That's exactly what they're doing. They shouldn't have to think about transgenderism and homosexuality. They shouldn't have to think about that. They're not going to do it on their own. I'll tell you that. It's only the evil adult in their lives that are forcing this topic on them. And I remember, Timory, I was so... It sticks out in my mind, this one experience I had when I started doing inner city ministry. Mm-hmm. And there was a boy there who we tried our hardest to keep every kid that we took. So what we would do is we'd take them out to camp for the summer. And, you know, a week at a time or maybe 2 weeks if they could handle it. And we really, I mean, if you at all could make it through that week, we kept you there, right? I mean, that was our goal, is to get you out of your tough urban environment, out of your broken home, and just let you relax and be a kid and play in the woods, right? And so we're not one of those camps that sends people home at the drop of a hat, right? That's sort of, you know what I'm saying? Like some camps, you're like, oh, you need to act. No.
Perfectly. You know they're kids.
Yeah, they're kids. And we are there to provide a safe environment for some troubled kids, right? And so you had to be really disruptive. I mean, you had to be really a problematic kid keeping the program from going in order for us to take you home. Well, there was this one boy, unfortunately, we just couldn't keep him there. It was just, he was becoming a danger to everyone. And so I was tasked with the job of taking him home. And so we put him in a car and I drove him home. And the stuff that would come out of this kid's mouth was just like, I mean, he's probably seven, you know, just a little boy. Was just repulsive.
Like
just, what? Well, just pornographic stuff. Like a very sexually oriented little boy. And I remember walking up to the door and you could hear yelling and screaming. But you know what else you could hear was porn in the background when I took him home. And I thought, man, how this poor little boy is just being so hurt by his situation. And I understand that that's not what every kid is, but you know what? To a degree, it's almost a level of degree. Like, why are we forcing all of this sexual stuff on these kids? We're harming them. This is not proper, raising of children as a family, as a society. And it's harming them. So yes, I'm glad this, play got stopped. It's amazing that it ever, well, it's not amazing anymore, but why are we having 5-year-olds and 8-year-olds?
Well, it makes me think, Don, of the conversation about IVF and embryonic stem cell research to educating 5-year-olds about gender. Really, I just keep thinking we have so lost the mark when it comes to family. And I think that a lot of this, and we could say a lot, but a lot of this stems from this totally utilitarian and a pleasure-oriented mindset that we see in divorce, we see in contraception, we see in abortion, where children are not looked at as something to be treasured and protected anymore. But instead, it has to do with justifying adult decisions, adult lifestyles, and educating young children on them, because if we want ourselves to be free and happy without any burden, we have to start doing the same for young children as well and treat them almost as equals in maybe the way they think, but children are developing what they know, the decisions they can make. There's a reason you cannot drink alcohol till you're 21. There's a reason you can't drive until you're 15. It's because the brain is developing, experiences are developing, and we should not be exposing these kids to this at 5 years old.
No argument for me. Let's go to a happier subject.
Happier topic.
Do you have your fidget spinner?
Yes.
Speaking of children.
I do not have a fidget spinner. Do you?
Okay, I do not have one, but I finally gave in to my son. My 9-year-old was pestering me. And I'm one of those guys who says, listen, what's the lifespan of this fad going to be, right? Is it going to be 4 days? Is it going to be a week? You can go to the archives of the Don Johnson show. We were talking about the, what was the game everybody was playing on their phones?
Pokemon Go. Yes, we talked about that
too. And I don't know who we're talking with, but they're like, oh, probably last a year. I'm like, no way, it's not going to last a year. I mean, maybe a month. What? It's it's gone, right? It lasted like 3 weeks. Everybody did it, and then it's gone. I don't know how long fidget spinners are going to last.
Come on, Don. Don't you know that's how I got my exercise, playing Pokemon Go?
Hey, good, great. I'm just saying, nobody's doing it anymore. And I suspect next week, maybe nobody will do fidget spinners. Anyway, it lasted long enough now. It's been past 2 weeks or whatever. And my son used his own money, and he got himself a fidget spinner. In fact, I spent a portion of yesterday taking the darn thing apart and cleaning it all out and putting WD-40 in it and making it spin all nice. Things dads do. You know, they're kind of fun.
That's what everyone says.
They feel good in your hands.
It's something to sit there. You know, some people say it helps them in multitasking, paying attention. Others like to just sit there and play with it because it's a moment to just pause and do something with your hands that's not related to technology, too.
Well, this is an interesting story. Where was it? Washington Post or somewhere? Where they thought that maybe they're trying to figure out what is behind this fad. And maybe it is, they suggested, because we are so cyber oriented, right? Everything's online. Everything's digital, is not tactile, right?
I think that's it. This tactile interaction, people are finding they love.
Yeah. Now, at first I was a little bit skeptical. Then I realized, here's what I realized, Timory. And I know this is radio, so people can't tell what I'm doing right now, but I do this all the time with my pen. I do this spinny thing that I learned in high school.
Can you twirl it up all your fingers? You're twirling it down three.
No, this is a special. In fact, not many people can do this.
No, I can't do that. I would drop my pen.
It's a special thing. I believe it developed, I don't know this for sure, but this is my theory. I went to school with a bunch of people from Southeast Asia in high school, and they could do this. And they taught me and a couple of my friends. And I've only ever met a few other people that spin our pens just exactly like that. And now I'm teaching my kids to do it. But I do it all the time. If I'm reading, if I'm at the screen, I notice I grab my pen and I spin it and it feels good. And it's not that I'm thinking about it, but I notice when I don't have it, I like to grab the pen and do that. And I feel like, well, maybe I've been early on the fidget spinner craze, right? Like, I've been doing the fidget spinner now all this time with my pen.
Now I'm going to have to take a video and put it up of you on Twitter so people can see you spinning your pen.
What is he talking about? I'm just saying, maybe there is something to the idea of keeping your hands busy.
Active.
In the sense of, like, just feeling something as opposed to just thinking and looking at a virtual reality. Mm-hmm. That makes sense, especially as Catholics, right? We're very holistic.
And understand we're a body and a soul.
Yeah, exactly. So to use your body is helpful.
I definitely think that is very true. And like you mentioned, or we mentioned earlier, just the phone, disconnecting from the phone and having something where our hands aren't just moving on a screen, but we're interacting with the physical object. It's almost like replacing and reorienting ourselves in our body in a sense. But also, what's interesting is the fidget spinner was actually created for people who struggle with attention deficit disorder or other types of diseases as well that they experience that cause a difficulty, and they need that tactile experience to help focus them or calm them. And I think it's so fascinating that as that's a topic for a specific group of people, this toy essentially has broken out across the country and is continuing to expand as something that people are finding, I think, a calling in a way of who we are is something that we're needing, that a priest actually commented on.
Yeah, I think we are people who need to be doing something physical with our bodies.
Yeah.
We can't just be sitting around. We can't just be Gnostic, right?
Yes.
We just can't focus on the intellectual. We'll have a little bit more on this and think about maybe some spiritual lessons we can learn from the fidget spinner when we come back. Stick around.
Timory and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. This is Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DonJohnsonMinistries.org or Timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
During the break, I continued to spin my pen. I don't have the fidget spinner with me, but I'm doing my best with my pen. We've been talking a little bit about the latest craze. Man, somebody's making a lot of money off of these fidget spinners. They're selling. They're basically two or three or four ball bearings like you would find in rollerblades,
yes,
with a little piece of plastic on them, and selling for anywhere from $7 to $25 and up, and millions and millions of fidget spinners sold. My son got his. He spent his own money, but he enjoys it. He spends it all the time. And we have thought, Timory, that maybe there's something true underneath this craze.
Well, there was a neat article that I saw on cruxnow.com by Father Jeffrey Kirby, and he talked about how he's used to working with altar servers before Mass, prepping them, walking them through what they need to do. And he's noticed, while usually they're pretty attentive recently, he's found them spinning these little things and staring at them and a little distracted in a sense. But what he's come to see is, you know, he's not sitting here saying, hey, you shouldn't be using a fidget spinner at all. What he noticed is how in this sudden craze over the fidget spinner, this attraction to, again, a really this little toy that was meant for people with, you know, who are struggling with paying attention and different types of disorders, how everyone's loving this. It helps relieve stress. It helps with refocusing their mental energies. It helps even with just giving them something to do where they can just sit and do nothing, in a sense.
Yeah, or nothing while they're doing something physical.
Yes,
it's almost,
exactly.
I mean, to me, we've talked about this before, the notion of going outside and going on a hike or just taking,
yes,
a little jog, just doing something with your body, gardening, go out and just do something where your body's moving and you're accomplishing something.
Yes.
Even if it's just spinning the spinner, it does, when you do it, it feels like an accomplishment. You can do little tricks. And on one hand, so it's a little bit ironic, on one hand, it's sort of a focusing tool. On the other, they're saying, I heard one teacher call them helicopters of distraction because they're flying all over the classroom. Many schools are banning these things.
Right.
And so maybe we should say, listen, if you need to be focused on something else, And your fidget spinner can't help you do that. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not the place for the fidget spinner. But if you're taking a test or something where it is helping you focus your mind and you just have the tactile stuff, that does seem to be a good thing. What does it say to us about being human that we need that?
We need that restness.
Yeah.
And we need this rest. And I think this is something that Father Jeffrey points out, is that he sees it really in a sense as a call to prayer, and this desire in a sense to detach, or really to calm the mind a little bit. That this is something that we're seeing, while beautiful, and that we're seeing it's incorporating the element of body and soul, how use this as an opportunity to go enter into what he calls the oasis of both rest and encouragement and prayer. And so he says, you know, as you spin, he says, spin on and say a prayer or two, because this is something that we see people are looking for, in a sense, with a fidget spinner. This slowing down, this calming down, this moment of connecting body and soul, ultimately, to God.
Would you say, as you were talking, it made me think of using the rosary beads, like,
yes,
we're using them with our fingers.
I was thinking the same thing,
right?
Actually. Yeah.
That it is a physical act that is helping us to pray more effectively.
Mm-hmm. It helps us to focus, recognize, oh yeah, if you get distracted. The worst thing is when you try to pray, at least for me, when I try to pray my rosary without my rosary, because it helps to,
yeah,
remind me that I'm praying my rosary, where I'm at in the rosary, this journey of the rosary. It shows that prayer is a quest, something that, not that we conquer, but we do accomplish, that we work through. And it is a moment of encouragement, like Father's talking about. And we use the rosary in a tactile way, just like the sacraments. Jesus didn't just say, here, stand here and pretend you're receiving the Eucharist. I'm going,
right,
to give you physically the mystery, the miracle of my body, because you are body and soul. So I will give you a physical reality. We have incense. We take them. We smell them in. It's so important.
Yeah. And this is something that is so missing, frankly, in the Protestant world that I grew up in, where you would not necessarily have to do anything physical or go anywhere physical to really have that close connection of prayer. And so you would just, well, you know, hey, I pray on the way to work. Nothing wrong with praying on the way to work, right? But at some point, and this is something even as a Protestant I would practice, at some point you have to get away from other things and kneel or get on your face or go to a special place, a holy place, right? And this is something that's built into Catholicism because it's true, but you go and you pray before the Blessed Sacrament, or you go to church, right? Or you use the rosary, but it's a much more, I think, realistic understanding of who we are.
Well, it's a reminder. I love that you mentioned this, and this is a totally different segue, because I get a lot of listener emails and tweets and questions, and a lot of them have to do with prayer a lot of the time. And you mentioned that in prayer, you often go to a special place, and how people in our lives anymore, we're so busy. We're looking for things like the fidget spinner to kind of slow us down, calm us a little bit, help us to focus. And how this is something we struggle with even in prayer, and how that prayer space, even if it's a specific wall that has no other clutter and just a crucifix on it, it may be, you know, different images of some of the saints that you love and you can ask their intercession. That's where you pause and pray in your home. Instead of, you know, it's funny, I have one shelf where my TV is, and I have my favorite crucifix sitting on my desk right underneath it. So I have it there when I'm working. But if I try to sit there or kneel before there and pray, I get distracted by the TV, the sticky notes, everything.
Yeah, right.
But if I look to the other wall where just the crucifix is, another crucifix in my room, then it's easier for me to kind of disconnect in a sense, pause and focus. Where am I focusing my attention?
That's an excellent illustration, right? I mean, I think we can all see that. Well, where's going to be a more effective place to pray? In front of your TV or in front of a crucifix?
even if it's off.
Well, even if it's off, right? But that's what I'm saying. Like, it doesn't have to be on and making a lot of noise. Just its physical presence there.
It's a
says
distraction.
Something. Yeah, right? Yes. It's doing something just by its presence. Yes, exactly.
With my to-do list right next to it. Oh, dear.
But that's why we have icons. That's why we have the crucifix, right? Like these physical embodiments.
Yes.
They're not there, you know, to be idols, you know? Sometimes charged against Catholics. Oh, you're using all these physical things because you're idolaters. No. We understand the human predicament, if you will.
Yes.
Better. No, we're physical people.
Even holy water, when you think about it.
Yeah,
holy
sure.
water. I have that sitting there, and it's just one of those moments where you go, oh my gosh, this water is blessed through the intercession of the priest and Christ making this water holy that I can place on my forehead, blessing my body. And again, there's that moment of we need these elements of our faith to put us into the reality of I am a body.
Right. Or the use of oils in the Catholic Church. Now, this is something I've been discussing with, shall we say, certain members of my family and friends who are big into essential oils.
Mm.
And I don't know that I was skeptical. I just didn't know anything about where this is not a commercial for essential oils. But, you know, people I know got using them. And then I can't even remember what I started using them for. But whatever the oil was I used, it worked fantastically. I mean, it was beautiful. It worked so well. And so I became convinced. I'm like, oh, great. I don't know what other oils are, but with this one for this particular ailment was fantastic.
Well,
right?
Remember not too long ago, my throat had been swollen for months. I was having a hard time with speaking and teaching Pilates. And I finally started rubbing frankincense oil on my throat.
Oh,
my
magic.
Gosh. The inflammation, it was incredible.
Right. So we're not here necessarily to sell you on oils. All that to say, though, that in our culture, I think we are starting to come back from, you know, maybe the edge, right? Where I feel like in certain areas in our culture, we're starting to be more open to the natural world, right? And things like
healing from things we have, like oils,
peppermint
tea, whatever it might be, you know, these things that are good for our body through nature as God created it.
So the conversation I've tried to have, and it hasn't gone that far, but to my people who are essential oil adherents, I say, well, doesn't it make sense that these oils that are natural, that are God created, right, that they do certain things? I mean, that's kind of the way the world is. Doesn't it make sense that God would continue to use those kind of things in the, quote, more spiritual life, right? Like, doesn't it make sense that we would anoint people with oil in the Catholic Church?
It's biblical, too.
Of course, it's very biblical, right?
I mean the kings, the priests.
Oh, yes, it's so biblical. But just this idea that, well, we're being more holistic, right?
Yes.
And so I'm just throwing this out there. As Catholics, we have an in, I feel like, with certain segments of the society who are now open to a more holistic view of life, if you will, that maybe they're more open to Catholic teaching. And on the other hand, there's essential oil skeptics out there in the same way that there are Catholic Church skeptics. And I get that there's not good oils. Again, this is not a commercial for oils. But what cracks me up is the people who... I had this one friend come to our house not too long ago. She had a migraine headache. And I'm like, well, why don't we try the frankincense? She put it on. The migraine was gone, like, just very quickly. And so she started using it. And to me, that makes sense, right? If it works, there's the evidence. I'm going to continue to use it. I tell that story to certain people, and they're like, that was a hoax. those oils, it's just all
so
a scam.
So you can take an ibuprofen and it works, but you yes, can't use an
exactly
oil
right.
from a plant.
Yes.
So it has to be created in a lab in order for it to be successful.
That is exactly right. And I feel like that skepticism towards that particular oil and that story that I tell, I have no reason to lie. I'm not selling you the oil. I'm just telling you the story, right? Yeah. This is what happened. A friend of mine who's trustworthy had her migraine that she'd had for days go away after using, that's all I'm saying. And they just refused to buy it. And I feel like that level of skepticism is sometimes directed towards religion and the Catholic yeah. Church in general. And I just want to say, just check yourself a little bit. Are we looking at evidence, or are we just a little bit of a side note there? Oh. But sometimes I got to get on my high horse.
Before we come back talking about the rompers that you wear, Don.
Oh, yes, the rompers.
I'll share with you a little bit about a master thesis that a friend of mine is working on that kind of ties into some of this in St. Hildegard.
That sounds good. All right, we'll get to that when we come back. You're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery.
From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending with Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Before the break, Timmery, you teased a little story that you wanted to share.
Yes, before we talk about the romper you're considering buying.
I'm not wearing one at the moment, but yes, it's in my Amazon cart. No, it is.
Well, it's interesting that we bring this up because a dear friend of mine who is looking at the state of evangelization, the struggle with atheism, this draw to Hinduism, Buddhism, this draw to nature healing and great awareness of food, he was talking about how it's drawn him in to write his master thesis on the new evangelization and St. Hildegard, who is a doctor of the church, one of the female doctors of the church, and how she actually was a huge fan of using Earth's remedies, the traditional medicine we've had for hundreds of years, the way that people were often treated, and how important that was, and how he sees the ties between that and how this turn today toward this healing through nature, and how it's us turning to God in his healing abilities and his purpose, searching for him in the created goods of this world. And so I think it's so interesting as we see this huge turn toward virtue, this turn toward older cultures and Chinese healing and medicine, that we see at the same time who is at the core of all of this.
That's a great insight, right? Like, yeah. We're going to the creation, and isn't it nice that the creator put within his creation certain
healing power?
Yeah, his power. Well, the heavens and the earth declare the glory of God, right? Yeah. Isn't that what we're assured by scripture? Mm-hmm. And I think we find that as we move away from that, that the more non-natural tech, and we talked about this a little bit earlier in the show, some of the synthetic hormones that people use and the made up stuff that we are putting into our bodies now
yes.
is having a devastating effect.
Oh, it's so heartbreaking. And I mean, just the other day, I had a woman come into the Pilates studio I was teaching. And she said, sorry, I haven't been making it to class. She said, you know, I'm going through in vitro fertilization right now, IVF process, trying to have a baby. And I just looked at her and 30 seconds before class starts, I said, that has to be so hard on your body. I said, it's high levels of hormones. She said, it's so hard.
Yeah.
And again, those few seconds that were allowed, and who knows where the conversation will go. But again, this synthetic element of what we're trying to do to our bodies at times and how it steps away from God's plan. And not just, we can't even just say God's plan, but how nature is created through God. we're not just making a God argument. We're saying this is how the body works.
Yeah, right. This is reality. We're just trying to line ourselves up with reality, right? this is the way things are. Why are we trying to go over here and create something new when God has given it to us right here?
So I have a question for you, Don.
Yes.
Have you heard of the different terms when marketing? Because, I mean, you do a decent amount of marketing in film industry. About bro branding and bronding, about how it's that you're appealing to men, a specific group of men, in your marketing tactics.
Yeah, well, in general, when you market to a specific group, right?
Yes.
You pick out your demographic and you make a message that you think is going to resonate with them. So yes, if you're looking for a particular segment of the male population, sure, I can see that happening.
So what do you think about the new marketing campaign toward men? Toward you.
Yes.
For the romp him. For the male romper.
I'm looking at a picture of it now. It's hard to look at. Honestly, I would have to turn away from the picture of these guys. Now, clearly, I'm not their target market. Who is that going to appeal to? I can't figure that out.
I have a problem with this marketing campaign here because there's a picture of a bunch of men in rompers, but they cut them off where the romper stops, so I can't see those foxy legs here. I mean, come on.
Probably for good reason.
How can you advertise a romper and not show the legs here?
Well, I think you know what it is. So I'm looking at the picture, and they've all got sort of trendy haircuts and the sunglasses, right? Very, I guess, is that a hipster glasses?
He's got the hipster glasses.
I'm no hipster.
But he's also got the lumber sexual look going with the beard and the swoop over
of
the hair.
That's true. So what they're trying to do is make what is historically a female garment, right? Can we say that? Is that okay to say anymore?
Yeah, it's a one piece. It's like, I mean, essentially a button up one piece outfit, but with like shorts essentially, or they could be longer pants.
I'll admit I've never been a huge fan of them.
Yes.
Overalls could almost be called.
We talked about overalls
last week.
But
that's not a romper.
Please just, I'm moving past overalls.
Anyway.
That was so like 90s or earlier.
This business is trying to market now the rompers to men. It's called Romp Him.
Sorry.
And
the name itself is killing
me. And they're doing their best to assure men. This is the marketing campaign, as far as I understand it. With this picture, and I'm seeing about, I don't know, 8 or 9 guys here. You're right, with the beards and with the trendy haircuts. They're trying to assure men that it is okay to wear these rompers.
So the argument's being made that while women had no problem adapting to men's clothing on their own, for some reason men need this marketing encouragement in order to feel comfortable wearing clothes that were traditionally worn by women.
Now, as far as that goes, I am all on board. Like, you're not just going to get men to go to the store and buy rompers unless they've been convinced that it's okay for them to do so. And that's what this marketing campaign is all about. Interestingly, the Huffington Post is offended by the whole thing.
Fallon is so upset. Sorry, Claire Fallon from the Huffington Post. We're talking about you today.
They're offended at Huffington Post because rompers should be gender neutral.
But you know what? They can't be.
I love this.
They should be gender neutral, but that's problematic because you want to know the biggest problem? You want to know why I avoid wearing rompers?
Let me tell you why I think it is. I'm going to guess. This is always because it struck me. I've thought about this before, Timmer.
Go for it.
How do you have to, when you go to the bathroom, you gotta get completely undressed.
Right? So same problem. Being a dancer growing up, I tell you, I have spent hours, summers wearing leotard and tights. It is not easy to go to the bathroom as a girl. I'm just saying, it takes a lot of work. You've got to take off all the layers. Even now, I teach, and some of my favorite outfits to wear in Pilates are these like workout type of rompers, long pants, a one piece type thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. There's always that question of, well, how lazy do I feel today? It's going to take time, or how much time in between classes do I have to use the restroom? So now here's the problem with it. Exactly what you're saying. This, what should be gender neutral, has a zipper for your fly.
Right, because, you know, we're guys, and so we need the zipper there. We don't want to be taken off the whole romper.
That's sexist.
This is what they're saying. Like, oh, you can't market these rompers to men as a male thing because you can't specify who should be wearing your clothes, I guess. It's offensive to say that this shirt is for girls. I can see, I guess there's going to come a time, probably very soon, when you go into a store and you're shopping for clothes and you're going to look up and you're not going to see this is the women's department, this is the men's department, because that will be sexist, right? You're not going to see that. So there's not going to be women's clothes and men. It'll just be all one shopping area, and you're just going to have to pick the unisex, the non-sex clothes that you want.
And it's already hard enough to shop. Those poor girls who have chests and they're already expected to be a size zero and somehow it has an M on it for medium, yet somehow you find yourself wearing a large because, again, there's this expectation that girls' bodies are like paper thin. It's just crazy.
So, or then maybe they're going to have to abandon the whole notion of putting a fly in clothes because that would be sexist, that we, you know, because men would make you more use of those. And if we're doing, it'll be interesting to see how the whole clothing industry reacts to.
And people are going to find this really silly, but so should female underwear have a fly in it so that it's easier?
This is what I'm asking. Yeah.
Honestly,
any sort of thing that you would do with clothing to make it fit the male or female body better is sexist.
Guys need more brassieres. That's all I know.
Hold on. Right.
I actually have a really funny story. Total segue, but I've got to bring this up, Don. So when I was in grad school, I went to school with a number of seminarians who are now incredible priests. And we were going through one of our scripture classes, and we were reading in scripture, and they're taking turns reading out loud. And one of the seminarians reads about the brazier, where you heat rocks and different things to keep your hands warm, like a little fire.
Oh, okay.
And he thought it was a brazier. And he starts giggling as he's reading it, and it's talking about flaming. flaming brassieres, and he's sitting here and he's turning red, and the other seminarians around him start laughing, and then I start laughing, and he goes, and I'm thinking, I'm kind of getting a picture of what's happening. I hear them whispering in their modesty behind me, wait, is that what I think it is? And the guy next to him goes, yeah man, and he's like smirking at him because he knows it's not. He goes, wait, so flaming bras? and I'm like in my buckled over, sitting in the front row laughing as I hear them behind me. And finally the teacher goes, what's going on over there? And I am like
That's
dying.
Funny.
And the poor seminarians end up telling our professor what they thought. And he starts laughing. He's waving his hands in the air. Oh yeah, flaming brasiers floating.
It's the burn the bra movement. You know,
burn the bra.
Move.
It was great.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that's been a lot of fun. Our show is over already. Timmy, thanks for being here, and we will see you next time.
This has been Trending with Don and Timmy on Immaculate Heart Radio.
Trending.
To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmy Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timmy.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.